Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, December 7th. Welcome to Behind the Numbers, Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Tealium. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm your host, Sarah Lebo. In the first half of today's episode, Chief Marketing Officer for Tealium, Heidi Bullock, joins our principal analyst, Susie David Canyon, for a conversation about changes in the retail space. Then, in the second half, I'll be talking with Susie and Zach Stambor about what drove people to purchase this Cyber 5. Let's tune in now to the conversation between Heidi and Susie.
Hi, Heidi. Welcome. I'm so excited to have you today.
Me too. Thanks for having me. This is great.
This is one of my favorite topics, customer data. I think that retailers over the years have really been spending a lot of time thinking about it, but maybe not as much time actioning on it. And I think the last few years have been so complicated that if a retailer didn't jump on the chance, now's their time, right?
I agree. Yeah, now is the time. I think if you were thinking about waiting, it's today's the day. Listen to this podcast, go make a change.
Right? Especially, I would say, I mean, we've talked about the pandemic and the impact, but now we're even seeing with inflation and budget cut costs that consumers are doing, that loyalty is really waning. There was a study that said around 60% of people are saying that they are less loyal to a brand as a way to sort of cut costs and to just try new things. So that makes data even more important. And when I think about data, I think there's lots of ways of thinking about it. But I think for me, the first part, if you don't mind chatting about, is this tension between privacy and personalization. There are lots of changes in the data landscape in terms of, you know, regulations and what is expected of brands. There was a study that said 75% of Gen Z, so this is, I think, the tension, right? 75% of Gen Z feel that having an ad experience based on their data is invasive, and only 40% are willing to give you data of the Gen Z to get a more personalized experience. But at the same time, they all recognize that data helps make it a more convenient and easier experience. So talk to us about that.
Yeah.
How do you tote that line as a retailer?
I think it's a big issue for a lot of companies today, but I will say, you know, I guess I'm an eternal optimist and I see a lot of companies doing it actually very well. I think to your point, just giving everybody a little background, I think with a lot of the privacy changes that have happened, like GDPR, CCPA, you have to be very thoughtful with customer data. And as you said, there's so many options today. People will leave. Like if they have a bad experience and their privacy is not upheld throughout the journey, that's just going to frustrate them and they'll go somewhere else. So brands really have to take it seriously. And something that I'm seeing the best retailers do is really what's called a value exchange. And that's really saying, look, when it's the right time, if you provide us with, say, your email address, we'll give you a 10% off coupon or 20%, which the holidays right now, that's great. And we see when people, you know, have technologies where they can collect data and action on it in real time, and they understand these preferences, the key is kind of knowing when to ask for somebody's information and when it's too soon. And we've all had that experience. It's like, I always equate it to dating. It's like, you can't ask somebody to marry you on your first date. That'd be weird and would not work out. And so retailers and brands have to think about privacy in the same way. Like, when does it make sense to get a phone number? If you're a loyal customer and you've been shopping with, say, you know, H&M or Zara for years, sure, that's not unreasonable, right? So timing matters a lot.
Timing matters. And you were saying, you know, and I think that's one of the best examples, right? It's signing up for a membership program. A loyalty program is a place where you can get easy access to first-party data. And you gave us a different example, also signing up for an email discount. What are some other examples? I mean, whether it's when to ask for it or how to ask for it that you can think of to help sort of inspire our listeners?
Yeah. I mean, I think that for me, it's always tricky when somebody is, when it's that first touch point, when you're just trying to get somebody to purchase for the very first time. I think that's probably one of the hardest moments. And I've seen like some very really creative ones where one of our customers, they basically have unlock your free gift. And so that's kind of playing on just your natural curiosity, like, what am I going to get if I give you, you know, my email in return? I think that was a really clever one that I saw, just the idea of a free gift. I've also seen, you know, if you purchase with it, which is big for retailers right now, as you touched on with the economy, if you purchase this, we'll discount another item that's similar to this, you know, maybe 10, 20%. So for holiday shopping, that's very appealing as well. But one of my favorite examples, we have one of our customers is New Balance. And one thing they do is they have an app and you basically can track your runs in this app and it will tell you when you need new shoes. It's like, hey, you've logged 100 miles. Now is time to buy for you to buy new shoes. And that to me is a great example of personalization. And it's, and again, it's when somebody has opted into the app, they're a happy New Balance customer. So it makes a lot of sense. But I think that that to me is another really great example where there's value for me. That's the key.
Right. Surprise, delight, and add value. And it brings up a really good point, right? Because we use data for lots of different things. So you collect data in many different ways. And I think I boil it down to using customer data. Either it's for growth. So how do you get your current customer to keep buying more? Or it's to acquire a new customer. But all of that has to be rooted in showing some sort of return on investment. When you think about acquisition, what are some of the different components of that that are sort of with data as an underlying factor?
Yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of brands right now, one of the common examples I hear a lot of is we in our business, this is a typical retailer, we might have 4 to 5 segments. And one of the things I hear a lot of is how can we move a segment up? Like it might not be our VIPs, but how do we take that next segment and move them up? And what could we do early on to provide them with something that's interesting or compelling, which gets back to the personalization. So if I know little bits about them and can provide them something when they get to my website that's really appealing, there's a better likelihood that I'll be able to move them up to that next more powerful and valued segment. Now, that's if you know somebody, right? Now, acquisition, when you don't have their complete identity, that we know is a lot trickier with third-party cookies going away and a lot of the privacy changes. And I might be controversial in this, but I think it pushes marketers to do a better job. It's like you can't just, you know, buy the data, create a generic offer and expect that that's going to work. It's like having a first party data strategy. And again, that's where you own the data. You're doing things that are compelling enough that somebody wants to provide that data so then you can convert them more efficiently. That's where I think the best businesses, where it, you know, the puck is moving. And companies that do that well, I think are successful. Another thing that your listeners might be interested in is we see also a lot with what's called more zero-party data, where when somebody's on your website, it's kind of like you ask progressive questions like, hey, Susie, we know that you're looking to book a trip and we know historically you've gone to tropical places. What about these selections? And so they can almost get to know you in the moment. And I definitely see a lot of makeup brands doing that as well. And I think that that's something that you can just create a better experience for your potential buyer. And I think that helps with conversion because it's on their terms and it's in the moment. And the likelihood of that working, I think, is much greater.
Right. And so I guess that brings about the point around, you know, this one-to-one communication versus one-to-many communication. Do you feel like there's, you know, times you should be thinking about it one way versus another way?
I mean, ideally, I think we always want to be treated one-to-one. And I think that's the trick with brands, right? It's not my favorite example is your local corner store where they know you. And that's easy to know people, but at scale, it's hard. And that's why we're talking about customer data, because even most customers at some point, they're not always going to be honest, right? In a survey, it's like, they might say, I'm always unhappy, or I'm very happy all the time. They tend to be in extremes. And data and people's actual, what they physically are doing tells you so much more. And that's why it is so critical for, you know, organizations to have this so they can create the right moment for people when they are ready to buy, whether it's a particular day, a time, even as we're talking about, you know, going into the holiday season, that's on top of all retailers' minds. How can I make sure that I'm converting as many people now as possible so I'm hitting my key numbers?
Right. You know, one of the topics that we talked a lot about in my previous life, and I would love to get your perspective on, is dynamic pricing, which also comes from data, right? And in some ways is the maybe harder part of personalization because you're trying to get that person who likes your product to purchase it at the price that they're willing to pay. Have you seen any companies doing that in a successful way and not in a, you know, newsworthy, oh my gosh, what is this company doing?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I can think of one company that we work with, and what they do is they do a lot of price testing. It's not what you're saying where it's dynamic in the moment. We'll try 3 different things. I know I have seen that actually with airlines, and I'm sure many of your listeners have seen that. So I think that that's definitely something that they tap into. But I have seen that one of our great retail customer that does ethically sourced diamonds, they do a lot of testing and have seen when is the best time to provide a discount. And if somebody buys an engagement ring, the likelihood that they'll buy another piece of jewelry that's maybe at a lower cost is quite high, actually, so that they understand like that's a great time to offer a discount once that initial purchase is made. So it's pretty interesting, like just when you have this kind of data, you really can get very creative with price testing. And also, like, I'm sure even looking at different days of the week, different times of day. But for us, I haven't seen as much with dynamic other than airlines.
Right. And I think it's tricky because it's even like sizes or colors, you know, it can become a little bit tricky to do and execute against. So maybe we're just not there yet. What about in terms of, I know that there are a lot of companies that are using customer data from a product testing perspective, like physical merchandise testing. Do you enable that sort of personalization as well?
We enable, you know, any data that an organization is collecting. So we enable first party. So it's basically any company that would use Tealium, they're going to own that data. So if they ask those key questions, the answer is yes. Cool. And something that we are seeing more of is, you know, we've talked about the importance in personalizing your marketing. But I think, you know, definitely looking into next year, and we already see this, is heavy personalization of products. So you see this a lot with athletic sneakers, right? Like Adidas does this, Nike does this. It's incredible. And so I do think that we're going to see a lot more of that. And it is helpful because another example, one of our customers is New Balance, and they sponsored the New York City Marathon, and they were able to target people in the Northeast during this time for certain kind of offers and specials. And then they had that gear targeted for people in that region on their website. So that's a really nice way to show like, hey, this is personalized merchandise that's relevant to you in that moment, and you have the ability to buy it. And I think that was very successful for them. So I do think we'll see more brands doing that type of thing.
That's very cool. That brings up another point that I think when we think about personalization, often it's very siloed way of thinking about it, right? It's either like the products that are recommended for you or it's the emails, but it's kind of, it sounds like it's really everything as part of the customer path to purchase that needs to be personalized in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I actually think of it as great personalization reduces friction. And that's, I think, if all retailers can think that, what makes it as easy as possible for a buyer? I mean, that's a great experience. And whether that's like, look, I want something like a product personalized, or I want this experience really when I want it, when it works for me, that personalization is just really reducing friction at the end of the day and making it as easy as possible for that person to get what they want, when they want, on the terms that they want. And we do see that when businesses can think that way and are successful and do tests to see, like, because, I mean, again, I'm sure you have different people listening to this podcast. It depends on your business, right? So personalization for jewelry could be one thing. For sneakers, it could be something else. And healthcare, it can even mean something else. But I definitely think that when companies do it correctly, it's very, very valuable.
Totally. I mean, that's all we're looking for, right? It's make it easy for me to buy from you.
Right.
So one of the things I don't understand, and nobody can help me really, really understand, why is it that if I'm on a website and I browse and then I make the purchase of said item, that still follows me everywhere? Like that seems to be like a friction-filled, very misused data, sort of poorly targeted advertising. What can retailers or brands do about that? How is that happening still?
Yeah, it's a great question. How is it happening still is even a better question. And I think the simplest answer is retailers and any organization listening to this should really look for technology that collects customer data in real time and unifies that and then delivers that back out through tools. So all of that is happening seamlessly. And the experience you just mentioned is an example of when that doesn't happen, where there might be data you have on your customer, but maybe the point of sale data isn't connecting to some of the ad channels. And so there's that delay, and that's a problem, and that's friction, and that's what we're trying to avoid.
I love it. I mean, I don't love the friction, but I love that we're trying to avoid doing that, because it's like, not only is it friction filled for the consumer, but it's also such a waste of money.
You don't want to do that. Like if somebody's purchased, you want to stop that spend right away and you want to direct that spend towards something else. So it's not great for the customer and it's definitely not good for the business.
Absolutely. And that's the other thing. When we think about data and data collection, we don't often, you know, think about budget allocation. I mean, another good use of data is budget allocation and predictive modeling. And there are so many things you can do with data. It seems like there are many companies that are just at the forefront and are using the data collection for personalization, but there are so many other things. As you think about the year ahead, what are some of the priorities that you're working on with your clients and the brands that you're working with?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you touched on this earlier, is just some of the economic conditions. And we're a global company. And so definitely some of our customers, I think in Europe, one of the big things that they're looking for is just, how can I be more efficient as a business? And you just touched on one. I mean, it's using your customer data to say, like, look, like, how can we make sure that we're spending on our highest converting audiences right now? And then maybe we're going to actually like pause spend on another segment that we know isn't going to convert at this time. That simple thing, in addition to, I think you also mentioned it, is loyalty and doubling down on your most valuable customers you already have and making sure that, you know, they're sticking with you. They're continuing to spend in the patterns that you're used to seeing. And, you know, I think with customer data and using that with a customer data platform, you have the ability to make little tweaks along the way that, again, can make a valuable customer even more sticky. Ultimately, you can decide to spend on a higher converting audience, halt it on something that's not. It's just, it's really sky's the limit. But those are the two that I see the most of right now, based just on the economy.
Right. And I mean, in the end, at the end of the line, it's just about, right, delighting the customer and making them feel recognized and heard in the way that they want to be so that they keep purchasing from you.
That's right.
That was awesome, Heidi. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of time with me to talk through personalization and what brands can do to make 2023 even more successful as we enter another difficult year. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Susie. I appreciate it, too.
Thanks so much, Heidi and Susie. We're going to talk holiday shopping in the second half, but first, a quick word from our sponsor, Tealium. The most successful retailers are reimagining their CX and creating amazing integrated experiences, whether their customers are shopping online or in-store. And you can too, by utilizing the customer data you already have. Discover how brands like New Balance, Love Pop, and more are using Tealium's customer data platform to unify existing first-party data and offer greater insights that wow shoppers. Learn more at tealium.com/industry-retail or check the link in our show notes for more information. Welcome back from the break. Thank you, Susie, for sticking around to join us for the second half.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
And also joining us for the second half, we have another one of our retail analysts, Zach Stambor. Hey, Zach.
Hey, Sarah.
Now it's time for pop-up rankings, where we take a look at specific examples and we rank them. Today, we're ranking what drove people to buy this Cyber Five. So more than 196 million U.S. consumers shopped online and in-store over Cyber Five. That's according to the NRF. That is the highest number of shoppers since the organization started tracking data in 2017. Let's rank what actually drove people to make purchases this Cyber Five. Susie, why don't you start us off?
Sure, I'd love to. I think we said five. It's five that we identified out of many, 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 many drivers. They are the things that hit home for us, and they are not in any particular order. But when we were talking about how the holidays went and we were thinking through like what actually happened and what did we see, one of the things we noticed was that necessity. So as people are tightening their belts and their budgets are getting a little bit stretched, they are going after things that they actually need versus the things that they want. And so usually gift giving is around, you know, making people happy and giving them things that they might not need, but that you think that they want. And it's a little bit more impulsive and a little bit more decadent. And this Black Friday and throughout the whole weekend, it felt like it was a little bit more of things that you actually need that were at a good price.
I completely agree. I bought a computer mouse this Cyber Monday because mine wasn't scrolling correctly. I guess that's a self-gift more than anything. But
I think that's an important point, though, because people were very strategic in their shopping and they were waiting around for, you know, a good deal on a computer mouse or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. I think that leads us to our next one. Zach, what do you have as another thing that drove people to buy this Cyber Five?
Good deals. People were hyper-focused on finding steep discounts, and they were widely available. The average discount rate was 30% on Saturday and Sunday, for example, according to Salesforce.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I feel like that we have seen that all holiday season and like beyond, right? Inflation's high. People are looking for deals. That's what's getting people to actually make purchases.
Right. And you always have good deals over this period, but they were particularly good this year. They were steeper because, as we've talked about ad nauseum, retailers have a lot of excess inventory that they need to move, particularly in categories like electronics and apparel and whatnot.
You all nailed it, right? There's a lot of inventory. People have heard the news about excess inventory, so they're not scrambling to buy things like they were the last 2 years when the shelves got stocked out really quickly and delivery of product was unreliable. And so now retailers have so much stuff and they're trying to figure out that fine balance. And we just heard about that in the personalization component, right? Like the fine balance between giving it away for free and getting stuck with it. And so we saw lots of discounts.
All right, I'm going to step in with our third thing that drove people to buy this Cyber 5, third being in no particular order, but one of our top five, which is targeted advertising. This definitely happened to me. I have been clicking on a bag that I've wanted for months now on Instagram. Every time I see the ad, I click. And every time it's the same price, which is more than I want to spend on a bag. But this time it was 40% off. So I got the same ad as I've been getting. I know I want the bag. I clicked it and I did buy the bag. So targeted ads, it worked for me. That's also discount, like that's deal. It's an overlap there, but.
Well, I think at the root of everything, pretty much, it has something to do with deals for the most part, right? Deals. And if it's not, it's, you know, another thing that we didn't talk a lot about was like standing in line. There are other things that are driving either purchasing or lack thereof. People are always looking to save money. So it's like, how do retailers think about different ways of offering a discount in a non-traditional way? So the ads seem to work as well. As the next one, should I go?
You should go. You have my permission.
Because the next one too is about saving money, but again, in a different way. For me, it was affiliate marketing. For you, Sarah, it was the ads. For me, it was affiliate marketing. I needed new makeup stuff and that never goes on sale. Like I had a laundry list of things I wanted to get and I still shop at Macy's because they are the best place to shop. And so I got the ping from Rakuten that I was going to get 15% cash back for shopping at Macy's. So obviously that was the perfect time because the more you spend, the more money you get back, which indirectly Macy's gives you the discount, right? But it's sort of like in a different way.
Susie, I feel like I can't let you say Macy's is the best place to shop on a retail podcast without asking for some sort of backup there. It's
no,
quite
right.
A claim.
It's my loyalties run deep to the company I worked for a long time. And I think that they're doing some very innovative things. But it is a data fact that they are very strong when it comes to makeup and fragrances and skincare in the department store space. That is a fact.
I definitely believe you. I've also never purchased makeup from a department store. All my makeup comes from CVS. So
the common thread, though, throughout your story, Sarah, and your story, Susie, is just like finding different ways to make consumers aware of the discounts that are available. And
yeah.
It's important to hit people in a lot of different ways because there's not one way that people are shopping.
Yeah. Definitely making people aware of the discounts. Like I wouldn't have gone looking for that one, but now I have my fake leather bag that looks like a binder clip. So you really can have it all.
The other thing, the common thread obviously is discounts and like meeting the customer where they are to get awareness of the discount. And it comes in many different forms. The other thing I would add to that, which is a little bit harder during the holidays because everybody is doing some sort of discount or like value-driven message, is don't do it at the risk of devaluing your brand long term and stay authentic to your brand and find the right ways of delivering the value message, both in terms of content, but where you do it. You know, not everybody uses affiliate marketing. So make sure that you know how your customer comes to find you so that you deliver the message in that spot.
I get what you're saying. Like if you're a luxury brand, you don't want to cheapen your brand, even if you are making your products cheaper for a day.
Right. Or maybe you do value in a different way. You do an experience like come in and buy this Coach bag and we'll do a monogram for free. And normally that's 50. I don't know how much it costs, but like that's $50. Right. So you're getting a discount, but just in a different way.
Yeah. And you're probably reaching the customer who wants a monogram Coach bag in a pretty specific channel.
Probably on Instagram.
Probably on Instagram, possibly through an influencer. Zach, can you tell us our final, in no particular order, aspect that drove people to buy this Cyber 5?
Absolutely. So that's buy now, pay later. The 28% of people planned to use buy now, pay later over the holidays, and they did. Orders placed with buy now, pay later services grew 85%, and buy now, pay later revenues increased 88% compared with the week prior.
Yeah, same thread, right? People looking for ways to spend less, or in the case of buy now, pay later, spend less right in this current moment. Any final thoughts before we close up shop?
No, I think it's going to be a tough holiday in terms of we're getting a lot of mixed messages and it's hard to know what's going to happen with the economy exactly. And, you know, we are hearing a lot about excess inventory, but at the same time, there are companies that did a really good job with inventory planning. And so you have to, as a consumer, tote that fine line between waiting for a better deal and not being disappointed. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
I do feel like this advice extends beyond the holidays. Like, it's definitely holiday specific and this year specific, but also like it is all about conversion rates. These are just how you get people to go from browsing to buying. And the answer is generally going to be some sort of value related aspect.
And it's really about finding the right nudge, the right push that drives somebody to buy, whether it's following them around on the internet or some sort of affiliate program or an email or whatever it may be.
So good work to the people who made my mouse for making my mouse stop working right around Cyber Friday. That was very, very smart marketing. That is all we have time for today. Thank you for joining me today, Susie.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you, Zach.
Thank you.
And thank you to Heidi for chatting with us in the first half. Please give us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on Instagram at behindthenumbers_podcast. You can see Susie's Christmas tree. You can see what Marcus has to say about Susie's Christmas tree.
I'm very sad about the commentary. It's beautiful, my tree.
Susie's tree is beautiful. I can see it right now in the recording window. Thank you to listeners and to Victoria, who edits the podcast and also confirmed that Susie's Christmas tree is beautiful. We'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Tealium. And tomorrow you can join Marcus for another episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast.